You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hi, welcome to Comeback City, where we explore Detroit's past, present, and future. Today, we are talking about food and drink in the Motor City, specifically the history of Verner's Ginger Ale, Sanders Candy, and Stroh's Beer. Three products near and dear to the hearts of Michiganders.
And don't forget Aury's Bakery.
Oh, that's right, Matt. I forgot. This episode is brought to you by Spectacular Strolls. Spectacular Strolls offers 15 historic walks in Detroit. Each walk is a self-guided 20-minute tour. Visit SpectacularStrolls.com to order your next Detroit history adventure. I'm Linda Shepherd, and with me today is my co-host and fellow curious cousin, Matt Shanken. Hi, Matt.
How are you, Linda?
I'm good. And Matt, I have a surprise for you.
You do?
I do. I have a quiz. And it is actually a Verner's pop quiz.
Excellent.
So, Matt.
Okay.
What is the name of the former Verner's gnome mascot? I'm going to give you three choices. A, Buzzy. B, Woody. Or three, Jerome.
I would say Woody.
You are right. But if you had said Jerome, that would be right too, because first his name was Jerome, and then they changed it to Woody because of the wooden barrels. So you are right. One for Matt, for sure.
One for Matt.
Question number two. The pharmacy where James Verner sold his first Verner's drink was located on Woodward and Clifford Street in Detroit. What's located on the site now? A vacant building. B, a Warby Parker's eyeglass shop. C, Moose Jaw. What do you think, Matt?
I'm thinking Moose Jaw.
Now, it's actually a Warby Parker's eyeglass shop, which shows the upscale nature of that area. Kind of, you know, Comeback City.
That's right. There was much consternation that Verner's had moved his original spot from down on, is that Campo? What's the name of?
Campus Martius?
Yeah, Campus Martius. And they moved it up like five blocks. And that was a big to-do.
That was a big deal.
So
yeah.
There you go.
So question number three, Matt. The original Verner's was intended as a tonic to cure what ailment? A, the stomachache. B, a chest cold. C, a sore throat.
I'm going to pick D, all of the above.
You know, I would agree with you 100% because mm-hmm. I believe that Verner's has magical qualities to it, like many a Detroiter. It's actually a stomachache. But I think it cures everything else, too.
I've taken it for many things. And it's but not cold. If you're sick, you have to have it warm.
Hot Verner's. Hot Verner's is so good.
Linda, how did we come upon this topic today for this, our second podcast? How did we come upon Verner's as a topic?
I think my cousin may have accused me of being slightly obsessed with Verner's.
You know, Linda, you are an excellent host.
Yes.
And, you avail everything to somebody. And when I saw a number of Verner's, Diet Verner's in the refrigerator, I thought, she likes Diet Verner's. It's how you sold it. And it's nice to see that relationship between a Detroiter and a Detroit beverage. So
I have to say, if I don't have Verner's in the house, I get a little antsy. I have to have Verner's.
And in the car.
And in the car. My cousin may have discovered a very large bottle of Verner's under the seat in the car.
Which
Which is gone now. It's been replaced. Okay, back to our quiz.
Okay.
James Verner later became a politician. What elected position did he hold? A, mayor of Detroit. B, state representative. C, Detroit city council member. What do you think, Matt?
I'm going to go for B.
State rep. Detroit city council member. And evidently, he was very responsible for the sewer system that is now in Detroit. His work on the council made that possible, made it happen. And Verner's Avenue in Detroit is actually named for James Verner, the city councilman, not Verner's the drink.
Ah.
Interesting.
Thank you for clarifying that.
Okay, question number 5. What is currently located at the site of the former Verner bottling plant on the Detroit River? A, an apartment building. B, Hart Plaza. C, empty warehouses.
Empty warehouses.
Maybe in the olden days, but now that Detroit has become Comeback City, we've got Hart Plaza there. And I think people actually kind of miss maybe seeing the Verner sign. But Hart Plaza is very, very nice. So, and a lot of wonderful events go on there. Okay, our last question. And this is an easy one, Matt. Verner sells the most, Michigan sells the most Verners of every state in the U.S. What percentage of sales does Michigan sell? 60%? 70%, wow. 80%.
I have to say 80%.
You are right.
Yay.
So, Matt, do you share my love of Verner's?
I do not have the passion or the kind
obsession.
Of obsession. I always, when I see it in somebody's refrigerator, I will always partake of it. Not something that I go out and seek. But, you know, how can you turn down a Verner's? I mean, it's part of your childhood.
Verner's is so good. It's delicious. And it has magical quantities.
It does. Originally, that product was done in small batches, and it was not produced and bottled in a plant. He actually, in that original store, he would ferment that the roots and things like that, and he would send that out to a franchised soda fountain establishment. Oh. And that's how it was distributed originally. So not bottles and cans. It was seltzer water
This was back in the 1880s or so?
Correct.
And yep. He was in Detroit.
In Detroit.
Yeah. I did hear kind of a funny story about how it was discovered. He was a pharmacist, mm-hmm. and he was looking for a cure for stomach aches,
mm-hmm.
and other ailments. And he put together this mixture of ginger, herbs, all kinds of things in an oak cask in the basement of his pharmacy. And then he was drafted into the Civil War. So he went off to war. When he came back, he tasted this drink.
Fermented.
And it tasted like Verner's.
Wow. Fantastic.
Isn't that wild?
That's great.
That's a pretty good story.
You know, probably if anyone's ever had, an old fashioned, it's made with bitters. And bitters was originally produced down in the Caribbean, and a German pharmacist had found it and brought it back to Germany, and it had sat in the shelves of apothecaries. But it's bitter, and it's not that delicious. And so Verner's always kind of reminded me of that same type of
– Really?
Yep, absolutely.
Sure. Huh. Is it carbonated?
Bitters is the essence or the syrup.
It's a syrup.
Yeah, and it's kind of predicated. So Verner's is really kind of predicated on that Angostura is what it's called, bitters. And I I do avail myself of that often.
Of the bitters.
Of the bitters.
And the bitter accompaniment.
I wondered if it was so sweet, like pops are to sodas. Look at me talk about pops. Hi, my name's Matt and I'm from Michigan. We drink pop.
We do drink pop. And we had a pop quiz.
That's true.
It's about pop. I drink diet pop. You drink soda pop.
So was it as sweet back then as it is today? And it's a question that I could not find an answer to.
That's a good question, Matt. I don't know the answer to that either. I do know that an original pharmacist, mm-hmm. one of his pharmacies that sold Verner's pretty much almost exclusively, is still in existence.
Where is that?
Flint.
Get out of here.
They should drink that instead of the water. Yeah. Halo Burger. Halo Burger is a chain that sells Verner's, the drink, which is unusual.
It is. It kind of harkens back to their original model of distribution, which was, you know, small batches got sent out. Fascinating.
Yeah. So he's got, they've got the original type soda fountain in Flint. I think we should take a field trip. And do you know what their specialty is there, Matt?
What is their specialty?
Can you guess? It is named after a street that you and I have recently visited.
Because of, that's right, Jail Hudson.
Jail Hudson.
It is the Boston Cooler.
Right. And Matt and I recently visited Jail Hudson's home, former home, on Boston Boulevard.
And that establishment was there on Boston Boulevard in Woodward, probably. Is that?
Not too far from Woodward.
Yeah.
I'd say like maybe a block from Woodward.
And, you know, if you lived in Detroit at that time when Detroit was just bustling and there were a million people here, Boston Cooler made all the sense in the world. It got a little confusing, didn't it? No one knew where the origination was or that it was Verner's. So.
Yeah. So James Verner lived a good, long, healthy life till he was 84 when he died, and his family joked that he did not retire until an hour before his death. This is a hard worker. And his son, James Verner, became the president of the company. And on Hart Plaza, where the original bottling plant, maybe not the original, but his big bottling plant was... It was a huge, big Verner sign, and I don't know if you ever went to Bablo, Matt. I did, but did you go to Bablo?
I did, yes.
Yeah, we probably, you know, saw the Verner sign there without realizing it when we were kids. It's gone now, but it was there. So,
yeah, Detroit, you know, that whole riverfront was Verner's and Stroh's and you know, cement factories and things like that.
It really was,
yeah.
Yeah, it was the city, for sure. And yeah, my last piece of information about Verner's is that it's now owned by the Pepper Snapple Group of Plano, Texas. It was sold in 1966. And I also came up with a number of recipes that use Verner's.
Do tell.
Soul singer Aretha Franklin is famous in this city for bringing to church potlucks a Christmas ham with a glaze made from Verner's. It's also used in a glaze for salmon and in batter for onion rings.
I want to get invited to that Christmas party.
I do
that
too.
Aretha Franklin is having.
I do too.
I think it's you know, it's kind of an interesting testament to you know, Verner's. I guess by the statistics, has always been a local beverage. As you know, never really expanded into other states, and yet when you see that it had been bought and sold, I don't know, half dozen times. that it still remains kind of local. And I think that speaks a lot to community, how Detroit has generations of families that produce lots of things like cars and
you're totally right.
And it's just this like – it's almost nostalgic in itself that this beverage – still connects people.
It really does.
In the 21st century.
And it's not just loyalty. It's some sort of magical quality that Verner's seems to have.
Linda, I think that is a perfect place to rest.
Verner's?
That is magical.
It is magical.
I got some goosebumps.
You got some goosebumps there.
I'm going to have to – It's going to be showing up in my beverage selection.
There we go. Excellent. There we go. So, Matt, should we move to Sanders?
Yes. I visited two Sanders this past week.
You did?
I did. And I will tell you that I heard many critiques from a wide age range of people when I had mentioned that we were doing this podcast and that we're going to talk about Sanders. A 36-year-old guy who lived in Detroit, grew up in Detroit, now lives in Los Angeles, right? And he turns to his group of people. He said, "Sanders, it is not what it was when I was a child." And I'm like, "Dude, you're 36 years old. I mean,
wasn't that long ago?"
And he said, you know, the original, you know, brick and mortar and the soda fountain, you know, he just went on and on. And I just had to kind of laugh a little bit because people in Detroit who know Sanders, Bumpy Cake, it's kind of like the people who know Bill Knapps. They're 70 and older.
Right.
So what's your experience with Sanders?
Well, my feeling about Sanders is, okay, and we're also going to be talking about Stroh's beer and Fred Sanders and
ice cream. Do not forget Stroh's ice cream.
And Stroh's ice cream, which is actually the perfect accompaniment to Verner's for a Boston cooler. Perfect.
I wonder if it was the original combination because Stroh's ice cream was manufactured on the river.
Right.
Yep.
For sure. Well, they're both, you know, the story of German immigrants. And Fred Sanders was born in Germany, but his family moved to America when he was a child. And he loved to cook. He was a little kid who loved to cook. And his dad picked up on this and sent him back to Germany to go to confectionery school, which is really kind of amazing.
It is.
And it sounds like it was a great idea. So he got married over in Germany, brought his wife back, started this confection shop in Chicago.
What?
Yes. In Chicago. And he was driven out of Chicago in 1871 by the Great Fire.
No kidding.
Yeah. And the story is that he ran ahead of the fire to reach his pregnant wife, put her into their horse and buggy, and they fled the city. Fled the fire, fled the city, landed in Detroit.
I am speechless. That is how Sanders came to Detroit.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so he opened his first candy store in 1875, and it was right on Woodward, very close to Verner's, the pharmacy. Everything was right on Woodward, right downtown.
Everything was Woodward.
Right in the center of what is the heart of Comeback City, our Detroit, which has such a rich history, and is exploding with development at the moment.
It is.
For good or for bad. The first pavilion of suites had a red and white awning and tower.
Can you repeat that? What? The perverse Pavilion of Sweets. Is that what you just said?
I said the Pavilion of Sweets.
Oh, I thought you said the perverse.
That sounds way more exciting.
I thought maybe sugar was, you know, there was some. Anyway, I apologize. Let's cut that one.
I think that was pretty funny, actually. Anyways, it had a red and white awning and a tower that was similar to a mosque.
It may have been.
And supposedly, it's where the nation's first ice cream soda was born. Fred Sanders used to make cream sodas. Cream sodas were the big thing. You'd have soda, put cream in it.
Okay.
You've got a cream soda. He didn't have any cream. He put ice cream in it.
What doesn't taste good with cream in it?
You're right.
Our grandmother would put cream in, it was her secret recipe, Boucha. She would put cream in eggs. That's what she did.
Was it cream or sour cream?
Oh, sour cream.
Sour cream.
Well, a variation of it.
Even my mom tells me Boucha told her, a good housewife always has sour cream in the refrigerator.
And I will tell you this, of our 33 cousins, I have no doubt that 85% of us have sour cream in the refrigerator.
Sour cream makes everything good.
It does.
I put it on fruit. I put it on soup. That and my new favorite, Frank's hot sauce, pretty much goes on everything.
Have you tried it with Diet Verner's?
Sour cream and Diet Verner's?
I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah, we digress. I apologize for that.
That's okay.
Okay.
I like it.
So we're talking about Saunders.
We're talking about Saunders. Okay.
So 1875. Think about Detroit in 1875. You know, what we see as the riverfront now, that was marsh. That, you know, all the places that the Stroh's and those factories were built on, that wasn't even like they had started putting their garbage out there. That was all built in. So I'm trying to think, like, Detroit went through a huge growth spurt during Model T, right?
So when
Henry Ford came in. So you try to get a concept of size and scale of the downtown area. And, you know, everything was, like you mentioned, everything that was anything in Detroit was on Lower Woodward.
It really was.
And Lower Woodward is the hub of the wheel that is Detroit. So everything – why am I talking about this right now? We're not talking about roads. We're talking about – we can edit this out, right? Okay. But
– no, I think you're right, Matt. Everything is right there. And everything
– and people talk about it. They mention this area. This is where everything was. So I kind of find that interesting in my research on this, different topics.
Well, last summer – actually, you know, there's so much construction going on downtown in that exact area. They were working on the building and they found the big black Sanders letters underneath a bunch of facade that was covering it up right across from the David Whitney building, just right across the street. So it's on Woodward between Park Avenue and Clifford Street. That's where it was. So
that is fascinating.
It is kind of cool, isn't it? And they're going to, I guess, keep the letters because it's history and it's important. And it's a big, big part of Detroit. Hey, Matt, have you ever had bumpy cake?
I have had bumpy cake ice cream. I've had bumpy cake in 8, 12, and 18-inch pans.
Have you really?
Costco has bumpy cake? No. Costco had a special run of bumpy cake during Christmas.
Oh.
Never advertised it because it was a local thing. They sold out of that bumpy cake so fast at $8.99.
People love bumpy cake.
People
are crazy about bumpy cake.
What's it? Well, but describe bumpy cake.
Well, I actually have a little story about how it was invented. Bumpy cake. I mean, people outside of Michigan or Detroit probably have no idea what bumpy cake is. Bumpy cake is cake with kind of ridges that are covered with chocolate.
So it's like a white flour
Yeah, it's
cake
pretty
mix.
Much always
But the special part is that frostiness.
The bumps.
And the bumps are filled with cream.
Yeah, buttercream.
Buttercream.
Yeah. Well, supposedly Jack Sanders celebrated an anniversary of the business and decided to pay homage to the founder,
okay,
who had passed away. And he wanted to make one of his favorite cakes, which was just a cake with really, really beautiful buttercream icing. And the buttercream icing was covered with a layer of ganache.
Oh, Matt, it's ganache.
Do you know what ganache is?
It sounds fancy. What is it?
I know what ganache is. I've made it for the first time recently because I've become addicted to YouTube cooking channels within the past year. But ganache is super cool. You chop up really good chocolate, mix it with cream, and microwave it until it melts. That's ganache. And you can do different proportions, like more cream, more chocolate. If you want it thinner, if you want it thicker, you can make chocolate truffles out of it. Hmm. Yeah, you chill it, it becomes firmer. Chocolate ganache is a pretty cool thing.
So you're telling me that on every bumpy cake, that is ganache. It is not chocolate.
It is ganache. That is ganache.
I will. I availed myself some Saunders treats, bumpy cake.
Well, yeah.
When I went there, and we had just celebrated a birthday of our cousin Denise.
Yeah.
And the frosting was sweet. That's one thing I don't. But bumpy cake, not sweet. It's not. It doesn't.
Because it doesn't have as much buttercream. Probably. Is that it?
I don't know. It just didn't have an overly sweet. Like, there was a nice thing about bumpy cakes that it just, to me, was just unique. There wasn't like really overly sweet and the bumps. You know, you just had these bumps. It's like a little waves, right?
So yeah,
it's not like an erratic bumpy, right?
No,
it's not like
Like lines of bump. I kind of always used to wonder what those bumps were and how they did that.
You kind of accepted it. It's just that.
It's a bumpy cake.
It's a bumpy cake.
Yeah, it's a bumpy cake.
Right.
But I guess when he was making this cake to pay homage to his father, he ran out of buttercream. He was going to just frost the cake with buttercream and then put ganache on it. He ran out of the buttercream, so he just piped the lines and then covered it with ganache. And bumpy cake was born.
It is through adversity that some of, the greatest.
It happens.
Yep.
It totally happens. So Sanders became Detroit's leading candy provider, and business expanded rapidly. It was sold at 200 local grocery stores. It was everywhere.
And then it disappeared.
And then it disappeared. Kind of.
Well, yeah.
This is a story that we seem to be telling over and over again. Bought by a bigger company.
Well, and that it was an investment group, and they had seen some that this brand, this name, had cachet and that you could sell it locally and people would buy it. My gosh, when I went into those Saunders, I counted 100 different products that they had, chocolates and I don't know if that's was originally what a Saunders was or, that's.
What's your favorite thing at Saunders?
It's bumpy cake.
Bumpy cake. Yeah. That's your favorite.
Yeah. Although I have to say that the service there was really nice. It had a sense of local. It wasn't like, and God bless, the young people have to work. But it was actually older women who had a history with Saunders. And it was nice to talk to them about their experience with Saunders. And some people said, well, we didn't go to the Saunders in our neighborhood. We went to the one downtown.
Really?
Woodward, sure. That was a fancy one.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
like going to Hudson's downtown.
Destination.
Absolutely.
Fantastic.
I love their candy. I think their candy's really good. We have a Sanders out in Rochester, You know, Sanders was purchased by Morley Candy in 2002. And so they have actually opened up Sanders stores. Now, I'm sure those are the ones that you went into, too.
Yes.
Because for a while there, you couldn't go to a Sanders store. It's been 2002 since Morley started the brand up again. And I think they're pretty successful. And they sell everything. They sell Boston coolers. They sell, the cream puffs. The cream puffs are great. That's a huge big thing.
One of the employees was telling me and she had grown up and she gave me this little history of why Sanders went by the wayside. And she said, you know, when you look at so what was a Sanders originally, right? It was a soda fountain. It was a soda jerk. And this is where all the kids hung out. This is where you went down. This was your local, you know, Starbucks or McDonald's. And, you know, with the advent of all this fast food, Sanders just couldn't compete. It became obsolete or by the wayside.
It's sad.
No, I don't think it's sad. I think it's just the way that people, you know, where do you go hang out? It's different.
Well, the company filed for bankruptcy in 1981.
No, that's sad.
It was sad. And the president at the time, Stephen Horn, cited reduced sales levels resulting from the prolonged and severe recession in Detroit and Michigan.
Hmm.
But who knows?
Was that family owned up until its closing?
Yes. Quite a few Sanders ran the company. Now that original building on Woodward is owned by Dan Gilbert and his Bedrock Detroit company. And once the Sanders building left, it became a bail bonds business. But then it went vacant, as so many buildings in Detroit did. But a restoration is now in progress by Bedrock. And work is expected to be finished early this year on the building.
So they're preserving.
They are preserving.
You know, it's been a battle downtown. Downtown didn't develop for a while because, you know, folks wanted to keep it historic. And there was lots of red tape and, you know, and it was tough to be a developer. It's nice to hear and find out that some of these buildings are kept and refurbished. I don't think it's a very large building, correct?
No, not super huge.
Right. And that was their corporate office?
That was their big store.
Okay.
And corporate office is upstairs.
So if we walked down to Woodward, if we got down on the People Mover and went down to Woodward, we could go and actually see that store.
We could probably see the Sanders sign.
Oh, very good.
I know. We should do it. So, shall we move on?
We do it every week. Yeah, what are you kidding? We get in the car and we go.
We love to explore Detroit. That's for sure.
We should.
Let's move on.
Let's move on.
Let's go over to beer.
Beer.
Always a popular subject. Who doesn't like beer? Everyone likes beer. Pretty much everyone likes beer.
I think everyone likes beer. And everyone's dedicated to their own beer. Old Milwaukee, you know, Schlitz, right?
Yeah.
The guys in their beer.
If you're out of Schlitz, you're out of beer.
Stroh's. That was Stroh's.
Stroh's. Stroh's, Detroit.
Represented the German, you know. German.
Here we go again.
Here we go.
Another German immigrant. Yeah. Yeah. Johann Peter Stroh. Actually, his name was not Stroh. You can believe that. It was. Let me see if I can pronounce this. Stroh Schneider, which meant straw cutter.
Huh.
Back in Germany. And the Stroh family, the Stroh Schneider family, owned an inn where they baked bread and brewed beer.
Oftentimes, the only real potable water, the drinkable, you know, there wasn't a vast, what am I trying to say? water plant where they treat and things like that.
Sewer system.
Yeah. And so beer was what you drank because you didn't want to get sick from the water. So there you go.
There you go. So the youngest son was Johann Bernard Stroh. And there just wasn't enough business to sustain the whole family and all of his siblings. And so he decided to go off on his own. First, he went to Brazil. That did not work out. Then a political turmoil in Germany in 1848 caused widespread emigration of Germans, mostly to the United States. So at the age of 27, he took off, came to America, and landed in Pennsylvania and eventually Detroit. Showed up in Detroit, 1850, and started Stroh's Beer Brewery. So the Stroh's signs all say, since 1850, just quite a while ago.
That is. It reminds me that Detroit has seen so many bubbles of growth and has really benefited from an immigrant population. And
he found a place to live on Catherine Street near what is now Greektown and set up a small brewery operation and delivered kegs in a wagon with a team of horses. And the operation grew and grew. And he constructed a large frame brewery with a daily capacity of 80 barrels. Moved a couple times. The story of Stroh's involves family infighting, unfortunately.
Germans fighting?
Families fighting. He died at a fairly young age. But before he died, he had remarried. His first wife had died at an even earlier young age, and he remarried. And when he died, the new wife took over the business.
Wow.
Which didn't go well with his grown sons from his first marriage.
This sounds like one of these Game of Thrones or something.
A little
bit.
Yeah, really. All about beer. There were some drama. There was a lot of drama going on. And I think that the new wife actually just wanted to get rid of the whole business and did not want to invest in the company, wanted to take dividends from the company rather than reinvest that money into a larger plant. So there was a lot of conflict there.
What time period was this?
This was still the 1800s, 1867.
Okay.
So somehow the sons forced the new wife out and they took over and they began to build their empire.
How did they define empire? Was it, that Stroh's was competing with Budweiser or was these breweries local? The breweries were local, right?
Well, in the 1800s, a lot of German people emigrated to the United States. Political unrest in Germany.
Absolutely.
Is, the reason why.
Wars.
Wars, for sure. But
did you know that our great-grandfather skipped out on the Prussian army?
This is the same story as Stroh here, because he did the same thing. He didn't want to get drafted. And his family owned an inn also.
He did?
Yes.
We're talking about Jadusch?
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, for sure.
Goes to show you we're lovers, not fighters.
There we go. So a lot of German emigrants came to the United States, and many of them opened, no big surprise, beer gardens.
there was a and I'm looking on my phone. There was a great history of Detroit, and it's a quick read. It's done by a local professor at, I think it's Wayne State, and it's such a novel way of looking at Detroit in this sense that Detroit was always a city that rose, and then, well, it literally burned.
Yeah.
And then it came back again and it rose and then it burned.
Yeah.
And then it rose and it burned. And through all this, one cultural significant feature remained in Detroit, and that was this. It was a party town. There were block parties. There were communities around beer, around
beer
liquor.
Gardens.
And, you know, the border between Windsor and Detroit was the – during Prohibition, there was more liquor came between Windsor and Detroit than any other border. We come from a long line of people who like parties. Our grandfather, our grandparents. And I just – I find that kind of – I don't know. Beer, parties, Detroit.
I love the two words, beer garden. To me, that just sounds like fun. That's a party in a name.
That is a party in a name. but if you kind of know that your city's going to kind of burn for some reason, you know, or collapse, at least you got a party to go to.
Have a beer.
Have a beer. Just kick back.
Yeah. But, you know, Prohibition.
Prohibition.
Was a big problem for Stroh's and everyone else who was manufacturing anything with any alcoholic content.
What did they do? Well, I never thought about that in terms of...
It was a huge big deal. Well, you know, they started making other things. You know, they started making pop.
Ice cream? Ice cream?
They did start making ice cream, for sure. Absolutely. And they still make it.
I kind of have an ice cream fetish.
Yeah, for sure. Absolutely. And orange soda. I think they actually even made ginger ale. I'm sure it was not quite like Werner's ginger ale. But one of the other things that they began producing, and this was kind of a loophole in the whole Prohibition thing, was they began brewing a syrup that was manufactured as a cooking syrup, but was also used to brew beer. And I think this syrup kept him in business through the years of Prohibition. That and their proximity to Windsor helped a lot too. But it was tough times for the company, absolutely.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think about that. But
Prohibition doesn't. It just doesn't work.
It didn't seem to work.
It didn't seem to work.
It didn't seem to work. That's for sure. And once again, it was bought out by another company. The Stroh's family blamed unions for the downfall of their company. And this is also a familiar story. This is their story.
Can I get political for a second?
Yes.
God bless the unions. You know, I got to say.
Well, it's why we don't have 8-year-olds working in factories, basically.
It's why we have a 40-hour work week.
There you go.
It is why we have vacation and health care. We come from a white-collar family line, right? Accountants. But I like what the unions did here in Detroit. So, oh gosh, this podcast is going to get, we're going to get beat up on now. Don't
watch
get
out.
Don't get political.
Don't get political.
I can't say anything anymore.
So, Stroh's is still around. You can still buy Stroh's beer. It's, not owned by Stroh's anymore. It's definitely not a family-owned business. But it's still here reminding us of the history of the city that we love so much, Detroit.
Detroit.
you know, it brings back memories, nostalgia.
Hey, what's the name of the show again? This is
Comeback City.
Past, present, future.
Yes, past, present, and future.
Now let me. This is a little side note. I spoke to a young lady who works in a resale shop here in Detroit, and I got to tell you, she's 23, 24. She would get into all these buildings, right? Like uh-huh. old, you know, Stroh's. And boy, they got into all these buildings. Detroit has gotten to a place right now where she no longer goes into those buildings because they are harder to find and they are more difficult to enter. And this was only within about 2 years. And I thought, wow, Detroit, they're going to Columbus and these other towns. It's a sign that Detroit's coming back.
It is future. Yeah.
And I just.
It's not the city of abandoned buildings anymore.
It is not. And that's kind of sad for me because I love all those old abandoned buildings. But.
What do you call it, Matt? Ruin porn.
Ruin porn.
And you have delved into ruin porn on more than one occasion.
I can't tell you the fascination I have with going into neighborhoods. There are so many different neighborhoods around Detroit, Southwest.
The neighborhoods.
And they're like little architectural time capsules. Because there has been no renovation, because they may be in decline and they may be deteriorated. But basically what you're seeing is what that was built, you know, at that time. And I mean, there are homes that are sitting there built 70, 80, 100 years ago. They have never had any other siding. I mean, they have been abandoned for 30 years, right? And in
a lot of ways, it's kind of cool that you can walk in and not see some sort of crazy 1960s improvement that destroyed beautiful woodwork and original fixtures. And
that is, you know, that is true. There's a famous development. Oh, who is that? Who's the designer? Built the big black skyscrapers in Chicago. And he had actually built a
Trump.
But they're condos, I think, and it's down east side. I don't think you even know. I'm going to have to
in Chicago.
This. No, here.
Oh, here.
Yeah. So this community would have been totally torn down, given the proximity to if downtown Detroit was moving.
Are you thriving. Talking about Lafayette Park?
No.
Okay.
I don't know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
right
okay.
Now.
That's
but,
okay.
But, you know, here's the thing about this show. And here's the thing about you can, I don't care if you're 5, 50, 80 years old. You can come down to Detroit and you can just look around. Right?
You can. Absolutely. There
is no reason why somebody can't come down to
it's
this
city. It's a treasure hunt.
It's a treasure hunt. Linda and I went out last week and just drove around. There was never a safety issue. There was never
there are some amazing treasures in downtown Detroit. That's for sure.
I like my ribbon part of, you know, right? So you love your downtown. I like my ribbon.
Even not downtown.
And even not downtown.
For sure. And some very, very rich history. Extremely. And most of it preserved. Because of non-development, it may have been a benefit in the long run. So on this note, I think we're going to wrap up Comeback City.
What?
It's been a great time. Come back again. And once again, check out spectacularstrolls.com.
Thank you, Linda Shepherd.
You are welcome. Thank you, Matt.